Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and happy birthday to us. It is the 7th anniversary of the first ever Tennis Podcast. Since David's not here, I will urge you not ever to go back and listen to the back catalogue because it horrifies me. But if David were here, he would say, go and listen to the back catalogue. It's great. There's 7 years worth of podcasts to listen to. It is our second daily French Open 2019 podcast. Myself, Catherine Ritchie, alongside Matt Roberts. We've been watching and enjoying and revelling in the day's play. Marks out of 10, has it been as good as yesterday?
Yeah, I think it has. I think it's probably possibly even been better, just because it's been a fuller order of play. I was thinking, was that first podcast the one where David infamously predicted Serena to win the French Open and then she went out in the first round?
Oh my goodness me, it was. Serena Williams' only ever first round defeat in a Grand Slam to Virginie Rizzano.
Yeah, which was here at the French Open, and then today suddenly she found herself a set down,
yeah.
7 years on from David's prediction.
How perfect would that have been?
Yeah, I was trying to craft a tweet thinking about how I would do it. But
Serena Williams, you wasted a golden tweet because she did win through despite losing the first set 6-2. To Vitalia Diachenko, she then won 3-6-1-6-love in the preceding sets. Now, I don't really know what data to gather from that because I was not particularly impressed with Vitalia Diachenko. I don't know about you. I mean, there's no doubt Serena Williams did pick up her game, did start moving better. She was clearly nervous, really nervous in the first set. But equally, Diachenko was pretty poor, I thought.
Yeah, it wasn't a high-quality match from either player, really. I think Serena started, as you said, nervously, and it was almost as though she knew that she didn't have much match practice and that she was vulnerable, and she just wasn't moving her feet. She was just looking stuck there in the clay, and Diachenko managed to take advantage of that well enough, but you always sensed if Serena was able to up her game, she would win. And then at the start of the second set, she started getting louder. She gave a few roars, a few come-ons, and then that brought her best tennis as well. She started getting better as she got louder.
She was desperate to impose herself on Diachenko's that sort of slightly uppity type player that gives the impression that she's not going to be intimidated by anyone. And it felt like after a set, Serena went, hang on a second, you are going to be intimidated by me because I am Serena Williams. I'm not having any of this. And she started roaring into action and fist-pumping double faults. And I thought, oh dear.
This match is over for Diachenko. Yeah. But it's a really compelling sight seeing Serena like that. I think even when she's dominant, she manages to be compelling in a way that I think dominant athletes sometimes aren't. Sometimes dominance is a bit dull, but it never is with Serena. And
particularly in Paris somehow.
And then when she's down, it's even more compelling because you see her having to fight against herself and her opponent. And she often says, doesn't she, that she feels like she has to face the best version of an opponent because the opponent so often plays up. I mean, I don't think that was the case today with Dietchenko, but it just, every single match is such a huge task for Serena, and yet she manages to win so many of them.
Yeah, I mean, how much of that first set performance was down to the knee injury? How much of it was down to the fact that she's only played one match on clay recently? How much was it down to nerves? I don't know what percentage distribution of factors lies therein. We're just going to learn more and more with each passing round. I don't think we know yet who she plays in the next round, either Jakupovic
or Kurumi Nara,
yeah, who I believe is still on court. The reason why you're not hearing the dulcet tones of Simon Briggs, by the way, is because Kyle Edmund is still on court number one, the bullring court, whose days are numbered. It's the last ring of the bullring court. Suddenly everybody's getting so nostalgic about the bullring court. I've never heard anybody speak that fondly about it before this year, and now everyone's sort of mourning its loss prematurely. But Kyle Edmund is currently serving 3-5 in the fourth set, 15-30. It's going to a fifth, isn't it? I hope it's going to a fifth, because otherwise I'm...
otherwise you're going to have to urgent exit.
Yeah, but that is where Simon Briggs is otherwise detained. But we will give you soon-to-be-out-of-date updates on the progress of that match. What else has happened today, Matt?
Well, Jo Konta has finally won a match at the French Open. Her fifth attempt in the main draw to win.
And I mentioned that to her in what I thought were really jubilant tones in the on-court interview I did with her after the match. My last question was, "In Joe, you'll never have to be asked again when you're going to win your first match at the French Open." And she said, "Well, I have won a match, just not in the main draw." And I thought, "Oh, you have not taken that the way I intended."
She has been defensive about that in the past, hasn't she? Last year, she had a bit of a go, didn't she, at the British press corps?
She did. Simon calls it
B-word gate,
yeah. I don't know if the B-word is enough to give us an explicit warning, but we've avoided it nonetheless. I thought she was nervous, very nervous, and I was expecting her to be very nervous, because it's not ideal for her, a match like that where she's just hands down expected to win, especially in the circumstances of her never having won a French Open match. And she hits a big ball, Antonia Lotton. And when she walked out, and saw, I'd seen a headshot of her, but I wasn't expecting her to be quite so tall and strong.
And long-limbed.
And, yeah, really long levers about her. I think, you know, probably a 7 out of 10 for Jo Konta. Probably first set better than the second, but in the circumstances, you know, her desperation, I think, as much as she would never ever use that word, she must have been absolutely desperate to get that win on the board. And she now plays little Lauren Davis, winner of the USTA wildcard playoff,
yes,
I believe.
I was otherwise engaged during the Konta match, watching someone else, so hopefully we'll get on to, but...
Not before I tell you, Matt, that we're wanting to avoid questions that Konta could potentially take the wrong way. After our on-court experience, I asked her what her plans were for her day and a half off in Paris, thinking Champs-Élysées, Arc de Triomphe, you know, cruise down the Seine. She's going to play Scrabble, Matt. Those are the plans. She's going to play Scrabble. I mean, great. I love Scrabble.
Yeah, although it's not quite the Champs-Élysées, is it?
No, she's not. I said in French, and she said no, not in French.
Yeah, although I did like Konta's answer in press about, she was asked what she thinks the biggest difference has been for the upturn in her clay court results. And she said what she thinks she's doing is being more malleable, which is probably one of the few times that word's been used in a press conference. But it's one of the things that we've often said about Jo Konta, that she isn't. So I thought it showed a tremendous amount of self-awareness, that she realises that was something she had to improve on, and she's learnt to kind of accept that sometimes her main style of tennis doesn't work, and therefore she can make a few adjustments.
And that absolutely is a shift, because when she lost to Putintseva here in the first round last year, she came into press and she was asked, you know, your A game wasn't working and you just kept valiantly hammering away with plan A, just hoping it would start working at some point. Do you think that you need to develop a plan B, or even C and D? And she said, no, I know my game. I know what works. I've just got to believe in it and trust in it. And you know, a plan B is never going to be something for me.
Mm.
So it's a definite shift.
And that stubbornness is great when it's working, because when it is working and you're feeling that way about your game, you don't make any changes. You just think, this is working. But it's when it's not working that she's really had problems. I thought that was a really good answer and a good sign for Joe Konta.
What else has happened today?
Well, Victoria Kuzmova has won. She was who I was watching while Konta was playing.
I'm noticing you're saying that differently.
Yes, well, that was because it came to my attention during the match that all this time I've been pronouncing it incorrectly, as Mariana Veljevic, the umpire, was saying Kuzmova, and she is always correct. She is a fantastic umpire. And, yes, she had to say it quite a lot because Kuzmova won a lot of games.
You sound so perky. Well, she's not in your quarterfinal lineup, Matt.
Well, we are on a break at the moment from her being in my quarterfinals. But
what are you on with Diana Yastremska?
A downer.
Matt's pick for the quarterfinals lost today to
Carlos Suarez Navarro,
which was always a tough draw, Matt. What were you thinking?
It was a tough draw, and I put that out on Twitter. I said, I'm thinking of putting Yastremska into the quarterfinals, but I'm worried about this obstacle in round one. But if she could have come through it, her draw would have opened up. But she was 2 points from winning Yastremska and then just collapsed when she didn't take it and lost the tiebreak 7-love and then lost the final set 6-love. And interestingly, so Yastremska was the champion in Strasbourg last week and Putintseva was the champion in Nuremberg, and both lost today.
Well, that doesn't bode well for Sasha Zverev.
Doesn't bode well for Sasha Zverev. But Benoit Paire, champion in Lyon, did win today, so
maybe he'll make the second week and keep up his run of playing every single week, although he can't have played the second week of the Australian Open, can he? Didn't make the fourth round.
No.
So he's had the 1 week off, but yeah.
But yeah, Kuzmova looks a much better player now than when I picked her in January. Really quite good.
Matt Roberts expresses surprise at Victoria Kuzmova being, quote, really quite good.
Yeah. Well, she plays Bertens next, who
She'll need to be really quite good.
She will. But they've played twice this year, both 3-setters. So, and she won one, lost one. So
sounds like she's ready for a win.
I've got that on upset alert.
Right, okay. Keke Burns was good today, wasn't she?
She was good,
sort of unremarkably solid and good. And she's just one of those people now that you just expect to progress through these early rounds pretty unscathed. And that is what she did today. Bianca Andreescu is on court at the moment, set down. She's another sort of unknown quantity, injury-wise, not played since Miami.
And actually, it's interesting about Canadian tennis. Something we didn't mention yesterday was Auger Aliassime withdrawing, unfortunately.
Yes.
And it's this irony at the moment that Canadian tennis as a whole is in such rude health, yet all their players seem to be injured.
Yeah, poor old Mark Masters from TSN, the Canadian rights holder for this place, who I see sort of daily at every single slam. You know, we're always at the Lavazza press calls to speak to Carlos Moya or Uncle Tony or whoever it is, which is what we had today. And we're always at the Legends All Access Hour together. And he was trudging around looking not too pleased with the world at the moment, because obviously Auger Aliassime withdrew, Milos Raonic withdrew, Shapovalov has lost today in straight sets to Jana Nudstruff, which we might touch on if we have time, although maybe we won't, because that was kind of entirely what we all thought would happen.
Yeah, well, you called it in our newsletter, you had Struff winning.
In honour of our birthday, Matt, this is the first time ever, I believe, that the three of us, myself, Matt and David, have scored a full house of correct predictions in one day. We do, during the slams, throughout the year, we do weekly predictions in our newsletter, because apparently someone decided we needed to do more predictions. And during the slams, we do daily newsletters and daily predictions. And
it's a lot of predictions.
We've peaked too soon.
We have. We nailed it today, to be fair.
What was your prediction?
Mine was Filip Krajinovic to beat Tiafo.
Which took 5 sets, but it happened.
It did take 5 sets.
And David's was
Kuzmova to beat Cornet.
Someone ticked jumping him off about
he
Kuzmova.
He was jumping on the bandwagon there.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sticking with the women's, other notable results, Wozniacki went out, but I mean, her leg was practically in plaster. I couldn't really believe it when I saw her hobble out onto Philippe Chatrier. It's quite a difficult sight seeing somebody play so clearly injured, especially somebody like Wozniacki, who's obviously not there to collect the first round prize money. You know, why are you risking it by putting yourself out there, especially at a, like with Kerber, a slam where she's never really gone into it, the French Open, believing that she has a chance of winning it, I don't think.
And yet she won the first set 6-love.
Yeah.
But it's difficult, I think, generally with Wozniacki at the moment. We know that she's suffering with an illness that is chronic, and she's really struggling this year. And her ranking, you know, she was number one in the world just over 12 months ago, and now, especially on clay, you don't expect her to perform particularly highly. But even at the other events, she's not been a huge factor this year. It's quite tough to watch at the moment.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Sam Stosur's won through, and I like Barbora Stutzeva, she's great fun, but I'm pleased for Sam Stosur. That happened over on Simon Mathieu. Kai Kanepi won. Ash Barty, another one in the sort of Kiki Bertens category of just, she's unremarkably won three straight sets, 3-3. That's just what you expect her to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And she is in the Serena section, so,
as she was last year.
Yeah, and she Serena was, that was kind of the performance that awakened Serena last year, wasn't it, when she beat Barty, and then she had to pull out of that match against Sharapova, but then she went on to make finals at Wimbledon in the US. So I think Barty's a much better player this year, though. So that is a fourth round that I would love to see happen.
Elise Mertens has won through, who I think we decided was our kind of cut-off for plausible
for
potential champions, the mix cut-off on the women's side. So Elise Mertens through to the second round, remaining in the mix.
But an unfortunate thing happened in the women's draw today was that Petra Kvitova pulled out before play started, I think.
It was
early, with a grade 2 tear in her left forearm, which before the tournament she had said in her press conference, "I'm here, I'm ready to go, I'm fine." And then she seemed to do something maybe in practice, was
it? How many grades are there? It's grade 2 out of...
I don't know. I think grade 1 is the least severe, right?
Yeah. I mean, if it's grade 2 out of 10...
I'm pretty sure I've heard 4 mentioned before.
All right, so, okay.
But I think she said 2 to 3 weeks out. She's hopeful for Wimbledon. And if she...
Oh, it doesn't sound like a 10 then, does it?
No. Well, it's a 2.
It's not a 2 out of 2.
No.
Oh, dear. How many people are still listening to this podcast? Happy 7th birthday, everyone. We really hope she's fit for Wimbledon, don't we?
Yeah, because she has been playing so well all year. She feels like, and so well and so consistently well. Like, she's been putting it together week in, week out. And you feel like if she was fit and healthy, she could have won this tournament. And her chances go up even more at Wimbledon, where obviously she's a 2-time champion. So I really, really hope that she is fit for Wimbledon.
Yeah, absolutely. On the men's side, of course, we had the Djokovic-Nadal back-to-back smorgasbord of champions.
Yes, of tournament favourites.
Yes.
And they both did exactly what we expected
Nadal
them to.
Nadal and Djokovic played really well. Possibly, I mean, Nadal I expected to race through, with all due respect to bloke whose name I'm struggling to remember, Hanfman.
Yannick Hanfman. I asked how many games we thought he might get, and the general figure was 4 or 5, and I think he got 7, so...
Well done, Hanfman.
He did pretty well, really.
Hurkacz, I thought, I mean, he absolutely didn't disgrace himself against Djokovic, but equally I thought maybe there would be a bit more to exploit nerves-wise there. I just thought... I was expecting slightly more. I don't want to do the guy this service. He's young. He's very new to that kind of stage. But
were
I thought game wise, he could have troubled him.
Were you expecting more from her catch or less from Djokovic?
I was expecting Djokovic to find it in the end. I wasn't expecting him to make such a strong start. I thought there would be a lot of nerves there from Djokovic, and I thought if her catch could come out and rise to the occasion and not be too cowed by the whole experience, that there might be a chink to exploit, which there so rarely is with Djokovic, but absolutely not today.
Yeah, as you said, that start was crucial. We see it so often, don't we? Is if these top players win a first set,
curtains.
You virtually have no chance. I mean, the statistics bear that out. And Djokovic just jumped on him straight away and got an early break and raced ahead. And obviously, everyone draws the comparisons with her catch to Murray, don't they? With its kind of mannerisms and everything. And Djokovic maybe put that in his mind, and because he's obviously done that to Murray a lot in the past, just jumped all over him and raced away.
The other mix-worthy male player that we've had on the schedule today, Dominic Thiem, in soon-to-be-out-of-date tennis news, is still on court, perhaps a little unexpectedly, on Suzanne Longlin, because he dropped the second set to Tommy Paul of the United States, which I'm not sure anybody, except for maybe David Law, saw coming. David is going to feature on our 7th anniversary podcast, because neither Matt or I have been following the live scores of this one in a little bit of disbelief, but we haven't been able to watch any of it. David Law, though, at home in Solihull, post-barbecue, check out our Instagram if you want to see pictures of David in a personalised barbecue apron, has been watching every single ball struck in this match. What's he had to say, Matt?
He said, Tommy Paul is playing a brilliant match. He's a proper dirt baller.
Who knew, Matt?
I thought Thiem was a dirt baller.
Tommy Paul, what springs to my mind when you say Tommy Paul to me, and it's not a lot, but what springs to mind is I think he was a junior Wimbledon finalist.
That is potentially brilliant Wimbledon junior knowledge.
Which doesn't shout dirt baller to
me,
but revelations all around. So that's Dominic Thiem. He has actually won the third set, so 2-1, most likely in a breakup in the fourth now, so most likely en route to victory. Carl Edmund won all in the fifth, so that one really on a knife edge, and goodness me, if Carl goes on to lose that, that's a toughie.
That would be loss number
six in a row. It would be winless on the clay this season. I spoke to Leon Smith this morning, happened to bump into him on his way in on he was heading in to watch go to Carl's practice, and then of course to watch him later on. He said it's absolutely nothing, this run is nothing to do with his tennis. He's hitting the ball so well in practice, it's all about his confidence, and just needs a little bit of luck, needs to get that momentum rolling. I mean, if he could win this, I think it would be massive, and if he loses it, it'll also be massive. But then at least the clay will be behind him and he can start afresh on his least favourite surface, the grass.
But well, that's it, isn't it? The clay has always been the surface where we've thought Kyle Edmund would have the best results, and yet it's been the surface where he hasn't really. So he's had the biggest room for improvement, and it comes around once a year, the clay court swing, and it just feels like such a missed opportunity this season on the clay. He's won one match on it. I mean, just,
when was the one match?
Did he win one in his Marrakesh? I think he won his first match against, I want to say it was Umber. And then he's lost everyone since, I think.
It's a tough run.
Mm.
In terms of Nadal, no, you're pointing.
Yeah, no, Nadal.
No. You're pointing at some diligently made notes, Matt, and I don't want to miss a moment.
Yeah, but they're on Nadal.
Oh, fire away. What have we got?
Well, one interesting thing and one weird coincidence in that today he played a German qualifier called Yannick, and next round he plays a German qualifier called Yannick. Well, I mean, what are the chances of that happening?
How common a name is Yannick in Germany? Answers on a postcard.
Yeah, but the thing that is interesting technically about Nadal's game, he gave an interview in L'Equipe where, remember at the start of the year how we were all talking about Nadal's new service motion?
Yes.
Well, he said that he kept it for Monte Carlo. And in Monte Carlo, we saw that graphic where he wasn't getting as many forehands off the serve as he did in previous years on clay. And we wonder whether that was to do with his tweaked service motion not being quite as effective or bringing him the ball he wanted. That is still speculation, really, but he says in this interview with Lequipe that he changed the service motion for Barcelona because he wanted the sensations that he's had previously on the clay to come back, and he thought that that started with the serve, and he's kept it, and he's planning to use it for the rest of this tournament, but then he thinks he might switch back for the grass. So all this tinkering seems slightly weird. Why don't you just go with what works, Rafa? But it's interesting that he has made the change consciously for the clay, and obviously since Barcelona we have seen better performances on the clay from him, and perhaps we'd need the data, but perhaps he is now getting more forehands off that serve.
But a well-placed serve is a well-placed serve on any surface.
But I think the reason for the change at the start of the year was to get a bit more power on the serve. And I think that, I suppose that makes sense that you'd want that on the grass as well. But
which was very notable in Australia right up until the final.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? And I spoke at one of the aforementioned Lavazza-based media opportunities to Carlos Moya earlier on today, which I've just realised is very fitting because he was our guest on the first ever tennis podcast 7 years ago today. Don't go back and listen, folks, because we've all improved a lot as broadcasters since that. Well, particularly me. I mean, David knew what he was doing. But, yeah, spoke to Carlos Moya today, and Rafa didn't play down the significance of winning in Rome, but I think he played down the significance of beating Djokovic in the final in Rome. He wasn't engaging in the narrative of it being any kind of revenge for the Australian Open final or that the Australian Open final was even anywhere in his mind, whereas Carlos Moya volunteered that information. I didn't have to mention the Australian Open final. I said, you know, Rafa is so much about confidence, seemingly even more so than your average player. How big was it for him to A, win Rome, and B, to do it beating Djokovic in the final? And he said it was huge. And he immediately said, because what happened in Australia, that hurt. And it was really important to him to supplant that memory with a better one. So I found that really interesting, and I still think what happened in that Rome final is more significant than perhaps some other people do. If we do end up seeing Nadal v Djokovic in the final,
do you think it's more significant than what happened in the Australian Open final? The fact that it's more recent and it was on clay, or do you take Grand Slam final 5 sets? It's difficult to weigh these things up and see.
I don't know, but certainly if the Rome final hadn't happened, then I would 100% be saying Nadal Djokovic final, Djokovic to win it.
Okay. Yeah, I think I probably agree with you.
Largely influenced by what did happen in Australia, because yes, it was hard court, but it was such a demolition.
It was. And the thing with Djokovic's tennis is that even though this is a clay court and Nadal is so much better on clay, Djokovic has got a style that he can bring to a clay court as well and can hurt Nadal.
Any other observations from Nadal's match? Because I just want to have a look at the draw, because one thing I was going to follow up with is to say that I think what Nadal needs is for Djokovic to have some legs taken out of him over the course of the next few matches. So I just want to have a look. Well, he's got Henry Laaksonen in the next round.
Yeah. Sam Querrey's replacement.
Oh.
I've given Sam Querrey a mention on the podcast. That doesn't happen very often.
Wow. Being understudy to Sam Querrey.
Djokovic will beat
him. Don't
pop
it. Don't pop that on the CV. And then a potential third round meeting with either Gilles Simon or somebody whose first name I'm having to look up because I've never heard of S. Caruso before.
It was, yeah, the person who beat Jaume Muna today.
Which is quite a win, really. And actually, yeah. I've just seen he's a qualifier, Caruso, so that's 4 wins on the bounce for him.
Yeah, one of 11 Italians to start the main draw here, which is the most number of Italians in the men's draws for about 12 years, I think.
11 in the men's alone?
Yeah.
Wow, which is a huge deal
for
them with
Nine. And 11 altogether with 2 in the women's draw.
I mean, 9 is still huge, especially with the ATP finals going to Turin
yeah.
in a couple of years. What else is happening? I mean, I said we might touch upon Shapovalov. Should we do it, Matt? We've got a couple of minutes to spare.
Yeah, I'd like to mention Herbert as well.
Yes, let's do Herbert instead, because Shapovalov lost in straight sets to Struff, and
that's
we all
there
thought
is
that
to
was
going to
happen.
Really?
Yeah, Herbert, far away.
Well, it's the first time he's not playing doubles with Mau at a slam since 2014.
R.I.P. Mau Herbert.
Although I think they're going to come back next year for the Olympics, I think they've said.
If Mahu will have him.
Well, quite, yeah. But obviously...
Never go back to your ex, Nicola. Don't do it.
Mahu yesterday was probably the biggest result for the locals here and coming back from two sets down. And then Herbert did the exact same thing today against Medvedev. Great win for Herbert. And
who I had in my quarterfinal lineup.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Medvedev.
It's good news for Nadal, also that, I would
yes.
say.
Yes, Medvedev summed that match up in 11 words. His press conference was 11 words long. He said, this isn't going to be 11 words, so I can't remember what it was off the top of my head, but he said he started playing better at the end of set two. That was it.
Do you think it was so awkward that any further questions people had, they decided just to ditch?
Ditch, yeah. I think that might have been the
really?
Case. But then I went to Herbert's press conference and I asked him a little bit about how inspired he was by...
In what language, Matt?
Well, I asked him in English.
Oh.
And cop out. It was speaking French in a room full of French people is intimidating.
I've never been able to do it.
Yeah. And he said that even when we're not on the court together, we're clearly thinking the same and doing the same sort of thing. That there was
that's so beautiful.
I know.
That's really got me.
And his face lit up at the mention of Mau, and they clearly have this connection. It was almost like how twins can, I think, kind of sense what the other one, or that's often what's said, isn't it? Twins can kind of...
How do you think he told him? Did anybody ask him that? How we reached the decision, how we broke the news to his twin that he didn't want to be twins anymore.
No, I don't know. But
just go and ask him that deeply unpleasant, awkward question in the next press conference, Matt.
but he is focusing. He has made that conscious decision to focus on his singles. That's the reason why they're not together anymore. And he was asked whether he regretted not focusing on his singles earlier, if he's capable of this kind of tennis. And he said no, because I simply wouldn't be the singles player I am today without the doubles. He really credits the doubles for getting him through moments in matches that he had to experience today, and also just generally improving his game.
Doubles is coming back into fashion, I think. I think in 3-4 years' time, most of the top players will be playing doubles. There you go, there's my prediction. Kyle Edmund still embroiled in a fifth set. Dominic Thiem looks like he's going to win. Bianca Andreescu is a breakup in the second, so TBC on that one. Just a very, very quick look ahead to tomorrow's schedule. Philippe Chatrier starts with Sasha Zverev against John Millman. Naomi Osaka next up against Karolina Shmidlova. Simona Halep against Tomljanovic, and then Monfils against Tauro Daniel. Del Potro, Garcia, Puy and Madison Keys on Longlen. Fanini is on Simone Mathieu, as is Ostapenko v Azarenka. Upset alert, or does it even count as an upset? I don't know, but I've got Azarenka winning that one. Sabalenka, in need of wins, takes on Sibulkova. And Court 7 is the place for British interest. Dan Evans is taking on Fernando Verdasco in the third match. Then Cameron Norrie against Bontrachy. How are you saying that?
I've never said it before in my life.
Bontrachy. Cam Norrie against Bontrachy. First up on Court 7. Do you see any upsets tomorrow, Matt?
Yes.
Where?
I think Sabalenka could be very vulnerable.
Does it count as an upset, though?
Well.
Yeah. Anywhere else? Anywhere in the men's? Any upsets? No.
I'd have Del Potro Jarry. I think I actually have Del Potro in my quarterfinals, but I think that's a tricky first
horrible
round.
Draw.
Yeah.
Horrible draw. Vavrinka won through today. That's my footnote. Oh, another footnote. We've been instructed to include it by David Law, the absent David Law. It'd be rude not to on the podcast's birthday, given that David isn't here to celebrate with us. Paul Jubb,
who has won the...
It sounds like a comedian's name, doesn't it?
Yes.
Maybe he is a comedian. I don't know. I didn't know he existed until a few days ago, and he's done this amazing thing.
He's won the US College Tennis National Championship. The first Brit to do so.
Which is a big, big deal. Big, big deal. Yeah. Especially now, as it feels like college tennis is really coming back into fashion as a pathway onto the tour.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys, isn't there? Steve Johnson, Kevin Anderson, John Isner, loads of them. And I think I saw mention that, you know, John McEnroe has won that.
Yeah, because he went and played at Stanford for at least a year, I think, possibly two. I don't think he completed his course, but he's a tremendous advocate for college tennis. I know it's something that Leon Smith really believes in. Cam Norrie obviously,
yeah,
went through that system. It does feel like that is... I think because the physicality of the sport, particularly on the men's side, although obviously Daniel Collins has done the same, but the physicality of the sport is such that you're not going to be winning Grand Slams at 17 anymore. Those days feel like they're over, or at least out of fashion at the moment. So you can afford to take some time to mature your game before you come onto the tour.
And also, when you're 18 to 21, dealing with life on tour must be incredibly difficult, spending so much time away from home, whereas if you're in a college environment, you're surrounded by friends, teammates, and by the time you get onto tour, you're more mature and older and better able to deal with it all, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I cannot imagine 17, 18-year-old me having to cope with any of the experiences that go hand in hand with being a tour player. So, Paul Jubb.
Nailed it.
One to watch for the future, guys. Paul Jubb. That's it for day two of the French Open. Happy birthday to us.
Bon anniversaire.
Join us tomorrow for 7 years and one day of the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with our executive producers, tennisballs.com, with Rio with a Y, our official mascot and lovely canine, and all our other supporters over the past 7 years. We're grateful to you. I've been stopped by a few people today, all of them delightful, that have said how much they love the podcast, and it really, really is very touching. Matt has been stopped today.
Yeah, shout out to David Kalina, who I said I would mention. He said, "Are you Grad Matt?" And I said, "Yes." He was at Kuzma Over's match. I had that influence on him that he thought he would get a second row ticket for Court Simon Mathieu to watch Kuzmova. So that was great.
Tennis Podcast team, trendsetters, as always, we'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.